I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast, and I had the opportunity to talk to one of Hollywood's major icons, Michael B. Jordan. In our conversation, Michael shares the highs, the lows, and everything in between, offering a genuine glimpse into his world.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. People give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
School of Humans. Hello, welcome to another episode of Cadaver Gals, the show where we talk about all the ways people have died throughout history to cope with our own mortality, and we're coping and we're so strong. Yes, thick-skinned and not sad. Okay, I'm Gabby, along with Nika.
Hi.
And Taylor.
Hello.
And today we're going to hear some fun stories that both of them involve religion. So we have, you know, a dude who thinks about volcanoes a little bit, and then we have a dude who, you know, tries to convert people, and it goes a little wrong. So that's what we're going to talk about today. So some trigger warnings are religion, sex, murder, colonization, and your body bursting into flames. So this is Cadaver Gals, and cue the music.
Cadaver Gals!
We're going to start off today's show with Taylor taking us way back in time, you know, like we are often prone to do, just going way the fuck back. So Taylor, paint us a picture. Where are we going?
Oh,
what's going on?
I will. We're going to talk about this fella named Empedocles.
Empedocles.
Yep. And he was hanging out in 5th century BCE in Greece.
Okay.
That's such a long time ago.
Yeah, you're right.
Though I bet their beaches were like even nicer because they already have really nice beaches because they have like the clear water and stuff. So I bet it was even clearer back in the day.
I was thinking about that recently. And yes, whereas I feel like, you know, oh, the air was probably cleaner, this, that, and the other. The water was probably cleaner. But they don't have like filtration systems that we have. And they were just like pooping wherever.
Yeah, but that was in the cities. Think of the beach. The beach was untouched.
Okay. Anyway.
Also, think of the food. Yum.
Or at least the poops were well placed or like spaced out on the beach.
Okay. We don't need to use that.
Mixed with the rocks because they don't have sand.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, Empedocles, he was a man of the arts and science.
Oh.
First and foremost, he was categorized as a philosopher, but he was also a poet, religious teacher, and a statesman. As any good multifaceted man, he would write his philosophy and poems, merging all of his gifts into one. So great.
Wow. Love a well-rounded man.
Yes.
I think we need more poets in, you know, the Senate, right? I think all of our the Senate and Congress, or we should have the poet president.
But yeah. So he grew up wealthy. His dad was an Olympian, which was cool. So his parents were apparently involved in overthrowing Thrasydas, the tyrant of Agrigentum.
Oh, that guy.
So he grew up with the idea of making change. So at one point, he took after his parents and overthrew a politician for being arrogant towards foreign visitors, which good for him, because that's more than we can say today as Americans.
Yay. Well, I guess they're just all overthrown all the time. So maybe it was just easier to overthrow them. Like, also, people were smaller back then, so you could literally just flick them and they would fall over, right?
I'm pretty sure that's what small. He did. Yeah. He just like flicked them.
I guess you're small too. So my theory isn't holding up. I'm sorry.
Anyway, so Empedocles was the one who came up with the theory of roots, which was that all matter was composed of four things, which is earth, wind, fire, and air.
Okay, well, he was wrong, because as we learned from when I talked about mirror universes, matter has atoms, and atoms have electrons.
This was before we knew about okay. This is before they knew about atoms. He was just like, hey, there's these basic things, earth, wind, fire, and air. And like,
just wanted to share that I knew that.
And so they're all just like the benders, like this is like a very like Avatar centric.
Listen, that's
argument.
The world I want to live in personally.
And so on top of that, he believed in two active principles of love and strife.
Well, that's good. It's like yin and yang, you know?
Yeah. So at this time,
it's like that lady in Donnie Darko. She's like, there's fear and love. Those are the only two emotions.
I need to watch that again. It's been a minute.
I really love that philosophers back then could just walk around thinking all day, and that was their actual job.
Okay,
and they could be like, actually, we're made up of sparkles and glitter and magic. And everyone would be like, write that down.
No, but exactly. So Empedocles, he was like this, you know, he was a politician, he was a poet, he was a philosopher. But like at this time, like there was only so much that was already known to be in existence. So you could literally just like master something. This is my projection. You could master something and then like you could just like literally think and invent something else. Given that could be arguably today, there's still a lot to be discovered and invented and all that stuff. But anyway.
But there's more knowledge that you have to like know before then you can like base something new off of all of that knowledge that's there.
Exactly. So anyway, so at this time, religion was life. And Empedocles would move kind of between religion and science, okay? So the idea here is that the Greek gods who possessed these four elements plus love are gods, for example, Zeus the gleaming, Hera, who gives life, and Aidoneus and Nestus, who would moisten with their tears to the mortal fountain. Nika, do you love that? I kind of really thought you would.
I really love the drama.
Yes.
I love it.
So these bodies were obviously the good gods. And then if the gods embodied the principle of strife, they were demons of hell, i.e. Hades. But all of these things had to have this like equal balance. Love brings all of these elements together, and without strife, the elements will all lump together as one and there'd be no change or growth. And then if strife takes over, all of the elements would just like rip apart to their bare bones. So you need all of these things in balance.
Obviously, yeah.
So most of his work exists just in like small fragments. Aristotle wrote about him and some of his poems made it out. But according to these writings, he seemed to be very observant and appeared to have knowledge of medical conditions and nature, which gave him the ability to like heal and apparently, air quotes, control nature. But really, I think he just like understood clouds or something. Like he was the first meteorologist or something. I don't know.
Same thing back then.
Yeah, but people are like, oh my gosh, that's magical. And so
Well, it's like he saw a cloud getting gray and he was like, it's gonna rain soon, and then it did. So of course they thought he was magical.
And they thought he was like controlling.
Absolutely, yeah.
Controlling the precipitation.
Is he a wizard or is he a meteorologist?
Exactly. Okay, so we also saved the people of Salinas, who said their town, they were like, oh, our town is kind of stinky and it's making us all get sick and die. So Empedocles is like, I got you. I'm going to merge these two rivers and they're going to make it like this sweet little mixture and heal the land, which it did. And these folks were like, oh my gosh, thank you so much. You're so smart. You must be a god. And he's like, you know what? Yeah.
When what? You merge like, rivers, what? Like, did he like build a dam or something? Or like, was it just like a, what?
Didn't go into specifics, but you know, maybe he just merged.
Well, maybe he dug a hole, like dug enough until there was water to connect.
Yeah, dug a big enough hole.
Yeah, you know, he just redirected the rivers. That's easy peasy lemon squeezy, especially if you're a god.
I didn't know if you were going to say he invented, like, in this smelly town, he invented the first scented candle or something and just made a mega candle.
No, he just created a new river with sweet smells that...
What kills me is that he said, oh, maybe I am a god. That's called girl bossing too close to the sun, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That is.
He was like, yeah, you're right.
Thank you. Can't let it get to your head.
He's like, thank you so much for acknowledging that. And so that's how he began to live his life. So to paint you a little picture, Empedocles was probably bearded, wasn't noted, but in lots of the pictures, he like had this like kind of curly beard. But most notably, he was a fashionista. He wore bronze sandals and a wreath on his head, not unlike how Greek gods are depicted.
Oh, wow. My gosh.
He once wrote, this is so good, you guys. I, in your eyes, a deathless god, no longer mortal, go among all, honored just as I seem, wreathed with ribbons and festive garlands. As soon as I arrive in flourishing cities, I am revered by all men and women, and they follow at once. And there are 10,000s asking, where is the path to gain? Some in need of divinations, other in all sorts of disease, sought to hear a healing oracle.
Was he a Leo?
I don't know.
He was feeling himself.
He thought he was like the coolest. He was like, yeah, I'm a god. Yeah. It's fine. So this kind of got to his head, though. So at the age of 60, mind you, that's pretty old for 5th century BC. But he's like, hey, everyone, I'm a god here on Earth, right? And they're like, everybody's like, yeah, that checks out. But others were like, no, not so much. So he's like, fine, I'll prove it to you. I'll prove to you that I'm an immortal god and I cannot die. So he's like, I'm going to hike to this volcano, Mount Etna, jump in, come right back out and prove to y'all like, hey, I can't die.
Sounds like he's going to die.
So
no, he's still alive.
Yeah, alive today. So he marches off and he's like, does a little swan dive. And you guessed it. He did not come back out. But everybody was like, oh, so he's not a god. And rumor has it, which I'm sure this is fact, the volcano spit out one of his bronze sandals out of spite.
Out of spite. That is so beautiful.
How dare you say you are a god?
It's true. It's true.
You are not. I'm going to just prove to everyone and spit out your bronze sandal. So yeah, he didn't come back out. And that is how Empedocles expired.
I mean, I think that paints a, you know, that's a good lesson for us all.
Yeah, don't get too arrogant.
Yeah, or if you're like a god, just like keep it on the DL and you don't have to throw yourself into a volcano.
Keep it to yourself.
You should just believe in yourself. You don't need to like prove it to the haters that you're a god. Just like be a god.
I don't think a god would ever, well, never mind. I'm not going
to
get in.
A god wouldn't need to prove themselves. Exactly. That's all I'm saying. Exactly. So you guys just make large claims about how you're a god and just like that's all you need to do. So
I feel like he started out doing so well though, you know, and then it just like once people were like, oh my god, you're so smart, he was like, yeah, I must be a god.
That is a, you know, timeless tale. Wow.
Yeah, he is reincarnated in Kanye West. All right.
Ooh,
okay. All right, well, we're going to take a little break and we'll be right back.
Mother's Day is coming and Mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get Mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get Mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for mom is Mother's Day. Because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpert.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Cadaver Gals, your ultimate news source for news. Big news, old news, and new news. All right. The news that we're hearing about today is, what's his face? Empedocles?
Yeah.
You know, he tossed himself into a volcano. So obviously we have to ask the question, what the heck happens when you toss yourself into a volcano?
It begs the question.
It spits
your sandals back out.
Wow. Yeah. That's the thing. Well, the bronze sandal thing might make sense. I don't know what bronze's melting point is. So we're going to have to do some deep dive investigation into that, which means Google search right now. Somebody, we'll figure it out by the end of this. But so falling into a volcano seems like not a good idea based on some fun videos
so
that I watched.
So tempting, though, right? Like, you look at the lava, you look at the volcano bubbling, you want to take a bath. You know, you want to bite the lava. It makes sense. I want the magma in my mouth.
Oh, yeah. I Googled it. I Googled bronze.
What's the melting point?
1,675 degrees Fahrenheit.
What does that tell
us? Depending on the volcano, it would melt. Because some volcanoes, there's three main types of volcanoes. And one of them, you know, it's the weakest one, which is, you know, it only gets up to like 900 degrees Fahrenheit.
That's weak.
That is weak.
That is weak. But then like the hotter ones can get up to like 2400 degrees Fahrenheit, you know. So those are the most common ones. The hot ones are the most common. So the thing, though, is that it seems, first of all, it'd be very difficult to even get to a volcano that's kind of like bubbling up, you know, like a good candidate to like toss yourself into a volcano. It'd just be hard to get there because it like emanates so much like noxious gas that you would just probably end up like asphyxiating before you could even get to the volcano, which that also begs the question, then how did people get all those virgins to the top of the volcanoes and throw them in, you know?
Maybe they had little rags to cover their faces.
Rags.
Yeah, they had little rags. Here's a question. If you were a virgin to be sacrificed, wouldn't you just like go and bang somebody so you couldn't be sacrificed anymore?
But then you would face dishonor and also death, probably.
Oh, that's a good point. It's a real lose-lose being exactly. A virgin. Yeah.
But rather go out with an orgasm than not, you know?
That is a great point, Nika. Thank you. Anyway, so if you were even to like get to the top of the volcano without like suffocating a little bit, just being choked on the inside, you know, what would then happen is then if you hurled yourself into the volcano, you would be exposed to even more gas, which would basically like char your lungs. That's sexy. That you know, just like a nice lung barbecue.
That sounds awful.
Yeah, it would hurt, you know.
Yeah.
It would be a bad news bears.
I would think so. Wow.
It's like, I guess last year when I went to Los Angeles, when one of the many times that there were nearby forest fires, just going outside and like breathing in the smoke from like miles and miles away, I was like, ouchie. So I can't even imagine.
Yeah, you called me and you were like, I am not okay. This is terrible.
Yeah. I was like, ow.
Wow. You are not a god, Gabby, despite your god complex.
It's true. I mean, no, it's not true. I'm not godly. My lungs are not part of my godliness. I am a god in a mortal's body.
Wow. Okay. Gotcha.
Which maybe Empedocles, that was kind of like, maybe that was his point. You know, maybe his immortal soul then, you know, maybe he's up with the gods now wearing their little hats and robes and stuff, you know?
And bronze sandals.
I don't know. Like, bronze sand, that seems like a heavy shoe.
I was
right?
just thinking that actually. Yeah. It really does seem heavy and hard to walk around. You know, they have strong legs, probably.
Not if you're a god.
I mean, I guess so.
Yeah, maybe he had like really good like leg strength though, because he was always like wearing like weighted sandals. So then he probably had like his legs probably looked really good.
He did like his YouTube workouts every morning.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So anyway, you're falling in a volcano, right? And like, it's already going to be like super hot even before you reach the magma at the bottom. And so we can also, let's all remember that it's called magma when it's inside the volcano. It's like the pre-ejaculate of lava. Like lava is like when it gets out, you know, when it goes and then it's like,
ew!
That's when it's lava. Yummy. Okay. But this is just magma. Okay.
Yummy.
I'm just explaining in a godlike manner.
I used to think lava and magma was sexy, and I think you changed that quickly for me.
By that you're noise. Welcome.
Now I won't throw myself into a volcano.
That's great. I mean, you don't qualify for the virgin sacrifice. You
the
harlot.
Wow. Okay, continue, please.
Calling you out. Okay.
That's right.
Our all virgin podcast. Anyway.
Okay.
So you're falling and it's really hot. So you might, along with your lungs kind of getting charred, you might yourself just go ahead and burst into flame, because that's just what happens when it's really hot. You just burst into flame. Okay. So you're probably dead, like even before you reach the bottom of the volcano.
I would hope so.
Yeah. Because what happens next is magma is a lot more dense than like water, and it is so like basically when you would fall and hit it, you would just like hit it like it was concrete, you know? So it's just kind of like your body, it is unlikely that your body is actually going to sink into the magma.
It's like quicksand.
Yeah, it's kind of like quicksand, but then you're never going to be, you know, ejected out of it or whatever. But so, yeah, basically you're just going to be like floating on it like a little boat, you know, on top of the magma. So kind of like, you know, depictions of lava in like historical sources like Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, you know, where Gollum, he sinks into the magma. That's very unrealistic, you know. It's unrealistic that you'd have the One Ring and then you would just fall straight into the magma of Mount Doom. Okay, so basically you'd just be kind of floating on the surface, and when you would hit it, though, you know, you'd probably break all of your bones in your body. So at that point, you would probably be like pretty dead, you know, or you just have, you get like concussed and have a little bit of a headache, you know, at the bottom of, if you weren't dead, you know, you'd feel a little bad. And then again, since you're at the surface of the magma, it's like, that's where it's like the super hottest, right? If you hadn't already burst into flames, then you would burst into flames.
Wouldn't it be hotter under the surface of the magma, or no?
That's a good point. It's probably even hotter as you go further to the center of the earth. Okay. That's a great point, Nika. But there, compared in the volcano, that is kind of, you know, when the, you're still in the air, place. It is like, yeah, a pretty, it's pretty freaking hot, you know?
Makes sense.
You're going to be like a piece of burnt toast, basically.
So you're telling me that, like, in all the video games, like, I'm thinking of a very specific scene in Kingdom Hearts where you play on top of lava and you can't, like, touch the lava. That's unrealistic. Like, Mickey Mouse would burn. You would not be able to escape that.
Well, Mickey Mouse, I don't know. If Mickey Mouse was, for example, made of titanium, you would probably be okay. Because,
or maybe Mickey Mouse is a god.
Or Mickey Mouse is a god. It just really depends on your conception of Mickey Mouse and kind of what he does.
Okay.
So that's the thing. It's like, if you, for example, if you were wearing a full titanium suit, which is there, that melting point is like 3,000 degrees, like maybe you would be okay, but you'd also need sort of like a breathing device. Also, you'd still probably get like cooked inside of the titanium.
Ew.
So also titanium suits, I imagine they're pretty expensive and not very comfortable
and
to move
heavy,
around in.
And heavy.
Yeah. So it'd be unrealistic in your titanium suit to get to the top of the volcano to then fall into it.
Okay.
But so, and then if anyone tries to recover your body, I mean, they'll probably die too. But if someone was able to recover your body, all that would be left would be ash.
Hey, you know, that's a good point. Both of our stories, or actually not Taylor's, but Gabby, you and my story have no body recovery. Mine in a very different context, but.
Spoiler alert.
Wow.
Well, it's actually just called creating connections, you know.
Yeah, that's good. I love this synergy of this episode.
Thanks.
So far.
Thanks, girl.
But I don't mean to brag, but if I fell to the bottom of a volcano, I do have those titanium screws in my hips. So y'all could maybe recover those and wear them as earrings in my memory.
Oh, how big are those screws?
They're probably gonna hurt your ears.
Yeah, I'm not gonna go through that just to commemorate you. Sorry.
Okay, I understand. Mm-hmm.
I would wear your screws.
Thank you. You could wear them at like, you could gauge your ears and just like stick them right through. Just to, in my memory. That's actually what I insist upon.
I'll do that.
You know what?
We could make it a necklace.
Well, it would actually be really beautiful that once Gabby passes, whoever loves Gabby the most sets the titanium screws up like a sculpture, you know?
What?
And, like,
who loves Gabby the most? Ooh, yeah, we could have a tournament to see who likes me the most, and then no one participates. No!
Oh my God!
I would participate.
But, okay, this is just, here's something from our mini episodes about death, obviously, because that's what the show is about. I do want to be canonized, obviously, but through the human canon metaphor. So when I die, I want you to put my corpse inside a human canon and then launch it, and then I want you to take my body and cremate it, and then now I want you guys to take my titanium screws and wear them. So I have a much more complex, you know, burial ritual now.
Gabby will live on for a very long time post-mortem.
Yeah, because I didn't, yeah, honestly, wow.
I'm gonna haunt the screws.
Please, no. Wow. Well, I'm glad you have a plan, Gabby. That's really good to know.
Yeah. Anyway, so falling into a volcano, would not recommend. There have been a couple people who have survived falling into a volcano, but that's because they fell into the like the weak ass ones, you know, that were only like 900 degrees.
What? Yeah, but they must have been still pretty burnt, no?
Yeah, they got a little crisp. They're a little bacon babies now, but
Gabby.
You know, they got a little crispy. They did.
You are being super aggressive today, but I love it.
Okay, thank you. but yeah, no, so they had a once in a lifetime experience, hopefully, of falling into a volcano and surviving. So
yeah.
Okay. Well, now that we know that falling into a volcano seems you would die like pretty quick, so maybe it'd be okay. But yeah, if you really survived the whole process of the volcano, wouldn't recommend. But Nika. Nika's going to now, you know, take us on a synergy journey of also not recovering a body. So Nika, we're going further in history. You know, we're doing a modern story.
We are, actually. I want to apologize for my like slight slowness. I am on a new birth control and I think it's making me a little nauseous. Because
but you're
as
a virgin.
Gabby said, I do be having sex.
Okay.
Wait, you can be on birth control and a virgin.
That is true. Let's say
there are lots of reasons why one would be on birth control that is not to prevent tiny demons.
Oh my gosh, Taylor. But yeah, it's true.
Is that what you refer to as babies?
Yes.
Tiny little demon. Especially our baby. Can you imagine?
There's lots of strife with them.
Gabby, Taylor, I want us all to have a baby together. Okay.
Yeah, let's do the science.
That would be such a hellion.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. It'll have a horse head, just like in the movie. Sorry to bother you. How is that cute, Taylor? How is that cute? That is not cute.
I said, that's
okay,
terrifying.
Taylor. But like, you wouldn't fuck a horse, man.
No.
Question mark.
A centaur.
Yeah.
Or like a horse head with a man's body, or like a man with a horse leg.
I do like centaurs, but I'm not like.
Why don't you marry one?
Yeah. And, spoiler alert, they're also not real.
Okay.
Oh,
well,
shit.
You guys, my niece is going to be a unicorn. And we were.
Well, have you told her that those aren't real? Because.
Well, yeah.
You should.
So we were my sister was like, I can't find like a white leotard. And I was like, it doesn't matter. They're not real. It can be whatever color you want it to be.
Such a bad aunt. Okay. Well,
I'm also going to be not real for Halloween. I'm going to be Jesus.
Oh, my God. Gabby.
Last year, you were Virgin Mary.
Gabby.
And this year, I'm Jesus.
Well, speaking of Jesus, this is a good tangent, actually.
Okay,
because we're going to get into Christianity today.
Yay.
We're visiting the year of 2018, so pretty recent. COVID had not happened. God's Plan by Drake was the number one song that year, which is a little ironic. And John Allen Chow decides to finally go on a mission trip he has been planning for a very long time. Now, John was a 26-year-old Christian missionary, and he was born in Alabama and grew up in the Pacific Northwest, which gave him ample opportunity to explore the outdoors and develop a love for adventure, like all the Tinder people. And this eventual love for adventure would lead to his demise. Well, this plus other things, which we will talk about. He attended a small Christian high school in Vancouver and was very passionate about his religion, about Jesus, as Gabby just mentioned.
Gabby mentioned Jesus.
Gabby did, yeah.
I did.
His family attended a Pentecostal church, and he was a part of this group called the Royal Rangers throughout high school, which is a Pentecostal scouting organization similar to like Boy Scouts, but has like a ministry kind of edge to it, I guess. According to their website, they, quote, provide men with the tools to model Christ-like manhood as they mentor boys on a Bible-based, Christ-centered, spirit-empowered journey to maturity in the faith.
That sounds sus.
It's so, oh my gosh, I was reading the website. It's so gendered. It's hilarious. It's like guy-friendly Bible teaching. Boys, time for boys, Bible for boys, the BBs.
What does that even mean? Like, I don't understand.
That's always the problem with the Bible, though. It's just I need a dude-only version, you know? I just hate how many women are in the Bible already, you know?
Yeah, Gabby needs a Bible for girls. Gabby needs a girl Bible. Anyway.
Yeah, I do.
Be pink.
Yeah.
Yeah, pink girl Bible. That has lots of illustrations because reading is very hard.
For girls.
Especially yeah. for girls.
It would cost a lot more, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, put the tampon tax on the yeah. girl Bible.
We say this, but I literally think I did have a pink for girls Bible growing up. So, okay. Wow. Okay, so he
Nika's
quickly
damaged.
Got... yeah. He quickly got plugged into the mission trip high school pipeline situation, which basically combined his love for the outdoors and his belief system. So it made sense that he would go down this treacherous journey eventually. He became this adventure bro. He documented all of his travels on Instagram and a blog that he updated fairly often. And apparently, during high school, he read about this indigenous tribe called the Sentinelese, who live on North Sentinel Island in the northeastern Indian Ocean, like near Myanmar, basically. And it's estimated that there are about 50 to 200 tribe members on the 5-mile-long and 4-mile-wide island. Very, very small, very isolated. It's estimated 50 to 200, but no one really knows because you don't really see them. There is one extremely famous picture that a National Geographic photographer took of a Sentinelese man holding like a bow and arrow up at a helicopter. So they do not want to be visited. They don't want to hang out. They don't want to know about cars. They don't want to know about Cardi B. Like, they just don't.
Cars and Cardi B.
I mean, that's what makes me think of modern times.
The two C's of modern times.
They don't want to be poisoned by Instagram and to talk about Jeff Bezos. They don't want to know. Which, honestly, big good for them vibes. So, yeah, very small, very isolated. They like to keep it that way. They are, as I said, hostile to outsiders, and they are accustomed to shooting arrows at helicopters or anyone who approaches the island via boat or via anything in general. They have killed outsiders before. So the Indian government had to make the island a tribal reserve, and they prohibited travel within 3 nautical miles of the island. They're hunter-gatherers. They're usually naked most of the time. They live in like temporary huts, have their own language, which we know absolutely nothing about. And so they're just here. They're hanging out, and John finds out that this tribe exists, and he can't get them out of his head. It seems like he found out about the tribe through this website that basically tries to take the Bible to remote parts of the world, and the Sentinelese was probably either one of the most or the most remote, isolated, uncontacted, like, place that you could go to take Christianity to, essentially. And he just became fixated on these people. He ends up going to Oral Roberts, which is this private evangelical university in Oklahoma. So, you know, this is kind of scary to me already because this kid had a very Christian upbringing, gets really, really into it. And then he's taught about this kind of missionary, I say that in quotes, missionary lifestyle and calling, also in quotes, because I think that is just modern, that's neocolonialism anyway. And he's taught this idea that converting everyone to Christianity is what he is meant to do on this earth. Which, by the way, again, is the excuse many violent colonizers have used for centuries.
I don't love that.
Yeah. And then he goes to this intensely conservative evangelical university. I mean, they are like no smoking, no drinking, no partying, abstinence, like everyone is there for this higher calling. It's a very intense and very closed environment.
You say like no smoking, no drinking, no partying. Like that's the only, like it's more intense than that.
Oh, I know. Those are just like the base rules. Okay. So while in college, he went on summer mission trips. He spent time in South Africa, in Kurdistan, in Israel. He graduated in 2014 and then he was offered a full-time job, but decided to focus even more on his missionary work, and he started preparing to meet the Sentinelese. Okay, so preparing for something like this is very intense. He took courses at the National Outdoor Leadership School. He remained single to focus on God and his calling. He worked as a ranger in the summers and like stayed in this isolated cabin and took care of the woods and did what rangers do. He trained to be an EMT and then also coached soccer for refugee kids. So he was just like doing all of this stuff. And then in 2015 and 2016, he went to the Andaman Islands, which is where North Sentinel Island is. But he did not attempt to see or like try to connect with the Sentinelese yet. He basically just went there to scope things out, to engage with the Christian community of the islands. And he actually went back 4 times in 2016. The people in his life knew about his plans and supported him for the most part, though it seems like him and his dad did not see eye to eye on the whole missionary thing. And his dad actually is quoted saying, religion is the opium of the masses.
Oh,
and wow. That John is gone today because of, quote, extreme Christianity, which, fair. In 2017, John attended a 3-week missionary boot camp with this organization called All Nations. And I was looking through their website, and it is so cult-like. It's insane. All Nations says that Christians have to have a wartime mentality when it comes to converting people. During this boot camp, this is so cringy, there was even a mock village part of the boot camp where basically employees would dress up as indigenous tribes people and act hostile towards trainees with spears. I just picture that, and I'm so embarrassed to be a person living in society. Why can I not be a bear or something like that?
Just a bear.
Hanging out, not thinking. Bears are great. According to the organization's leader, John was one of the best trainees they ever had. And he shared his mission with All Nations. He kind of told them what was on his heart. And though they told him it was risky, they were very, very supportive. So everyone knew kind of what he was up to. And a lot of friends of his are quoted saying, like, nothing was going to change his mind. Like, to him, this was a calling from God. So in October of 2018, he was ready. And he went to Port Blair in the Andaman Islands, which is the capital. And he stayed in what he called a safe house. He had gotten 13 immunizations to try and avoid getting the tribes people sick. But he also quarantined in the safe house so he didn't, you know, bring the flu to an almost extinct group of people. As I'm like rolling my eyes because I don't think there's any amount of preparedness to make sure that you will not get these people sick when they literally have not had contact with people for decades. Anyway,
it's kind of ironic as well, but
yeah, he was a massive admirer of Jim Elliot, who was a missionary killed by tribes people in Ecuador, and Bruce Olson, who is another missionary who converted a tribe in the border of Colombia and Venezuela. So John kept a very detailed journal inspired by these people. He wrote kind of how his heroes did with intense details because he very much knew how dangerous his plan was. And I think he was writing for people to know what would end up happening to him. So he wrote like a 13-page journal, which is available. And I did read some of it, and it is harrowing. It's really haunting, most because of the context of John's story. And it's also really sad because it's kind of crazy. He very clearly believed that he was doing the right thing. And he would write things like, God, if you want me to get shot, so be it. I think I am more useful alive. But to you, God, I give glory to whatever happens. And he also wrote, like, you guys might think I'm crazy for all of this, but I think it's worth it to declare Jesus to these people. People who do not know English. He doesn't even understand their language. There's so many things that are not clicking in my brain as to this plan that I'm just like, okay.
Especially as it's also just like literally illegal to go to that island.
It is actively illegal. It is a protected island. Like you cannot.
God's plan, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. So on the 14th of November, John and two fishermen set out to North Sentinel Island. They had to go in darkness because Coast Guards would have stopped them. John paid the fishermen $350 to get there. And he tried first contact on the 15th of November, stripping to his underwear, kayaking to shore, and bringing gifts of fish for the tribe. They yelled at him in their language and started stringing their bows. So he kind of threw the fish at them. He said, I am John and Jesus loves you, and then paddled away very quickly. So that was the first contact that ever happened. He made a note after this saying that he was disappointed they didn't accept him immediately. My God.
Wow. I know.
So he tried again that same day. And this time he was able to walk on the shore. He tried to mimic the tribe's people's sounds and started singing worship songs to them in English. And then he said things were going well. And then a little boy came up to him and shot him with an arrow in the leg. They took his kayak, so he had to swim with the arrow wound to the boat, which was a mile away.
Oh, geez.
Wow.
Yeah. That evening, he wrote in his journal that he was convinced this island was Satan's last stronghold and that he missed his family, and he was heartbroken that he was shot at and confused. If someone comes into your house and you do not want them into your house and you have them leave and then they come back again, so you hurt them so they will not come back again, how is that person confused as to like what you want? You clearly do not want that person to be in your house. Anyway, he decided to try contact once more the next day, and this time he asked the fishing boat to leave for the entire day so he could approach without the boat nearby at all, and he was never seen again. So
we can that's assume. What happened.
Oh, well, we don't need to assume, because fishermen confirmed seeing the tribe bury a body in a shallow grave a few days after. And there were a couple of attempts at claiming the body by the Indian government, but they were met with hostility again from the tribe's people. And eventually they decided it was not worth it. Many strong evangelicals, like the leader of All Nations, who had said he was a great recruit or whatever, said that he was a martyr and praised his actions and were inspired by him. And then one of his friends actually said, "My ancestors," literally quoted saying, "my ancestors were savages, and I'm glad that missionaries taught them Christianity and civility, because I wouldn't want to live the way they were living back then."
Oh, no.
There was obviously a lot of international talk about this, and what does this mean? Modern day colonization, blah, blah, whether he was dumb or really called from God or whatever. But the point is, it's a really sad story, and his family did not approve of his actions. They do not condone what he did at all. And extreme religion is truly the opium of the masses, as his dad said.
Wowee, Nika. That was a lot.
Yeah,
that was a lot of things happened.
I needed like a mental break after researching that, because it's just like so bad. It's just so bad.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take another little break, and then I'll talk about something wildly inappropriate based off of that story. So we'll be right back.
Mother's Day is coming, and Mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get Mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get Mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting Mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get Mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for Mom is Mother's Day. Because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for Mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now? Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, the story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, cadaver pals. We have one last little bit to get through for this episode, and it's going to be based on the seriousness of Nika's story that she told. This is going to be, you know, just very inappropriate and silly, but you know what? That's what happens on Cadaver Gals. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be talking, since we were talking about missionaries, I'm going to talk about the missionary position.
Oh, oh Gabby.
Okay.
I was so scared you were going to go there.
Gabby, what the heck? Of all things, of all tangents.
Well, I think it does sort of play into the history of, you know, missionaries and colonization and stuff. Okay. A little bit. So the thing is, the missionary position, that actual term for it didn't come up until, like, I think it wasn't found to be, like, actually written down until, like, the 1960s. And what people kind of think is that Alfred Kinsey, you know, who is like the premier sex scientist, like he kind of like kicked off the whole study of sexuality. He was like, oh, maybe we should actually think about this a little bit more. He is thought to be the first person to ever actually use missionary position as a term to talk about, you know, like face-to-face intercourse with the penis on the top going into the whatever vagina, you know, whatever hole. The whatever hole.
That is what missionary is. So, like, hole on the bottom, penis on the top.
Yeah, face it's to the, face. It is the male or the penis dominant position, basically. And what people be thinking, like, there's this guy named Robert Priest, who's a scholar. He wrote this essay in like 2001, just kind of like talking about like the missionary position, kind of like where it came from. And then he went into some sort of like, you know, larger argument about like postmodern religion and kind of looking at it in that context. Anyway, we're not going to do that as much, but he was kind of trying to figure out like why it was called missionary position. And what he's thinking is that Kinsey, he basically like kind of created the term based on either like a mistranslation or like a misquote of a bunch of other people, because they had all these like legends and stories about like missionaries going to like indigenous populations and trying to convert them. And this was like the position that they were saying was the one that had the least amount of sin attached to it. So there was like one story that people would quote where it was like a tribe in like the South Pacific. And like there's this story where like missionaries went there and they were totally shocked, but you know, all not only that they weren't using missionary position, like they were more likely to like have like the penis behind the vagina, so kind of doing like a doggy style type thing, and they were shocked by that, but they were also like super shocked by the fact that they would use multiple positions, heaven forbid, in their sexuality. So then they're like, hey, the missionary position is like, this is the only one that God allows, because it's like the male dominant position, you know. So, but all positions at this point were, you know, any sex was like considered, you know, sinful and shit, you know. Like if you go back to like medieval Christianity, it's like even if you fucking like if you fucked your wife too much, that was considered being adultery. You know?
Yep.
Which is just like funny. It's like it's your fucking wife. You can't even fuck your wife, basically.
Oh gosh.
But then there's like this other story that people would attribute to this anthropologist, Malinowski. He was like a big deal And so he would kind of like go around to different, like, you know, smaller populations throughout the world and kind of like try to learn their customs and stuff. And so there's this one group of people called the Trobrianders. And basically they think Malinowski, people said that he wrote this sort of like document out. And when he was talking about how these people would like make fun of missionaries by like doing the like a missionary type position. And like they would gather around like the campfire and just like do what the missionaries like had promoted for them to do. And but like doing it in like a farcical sort of way, being like, these like stupid missionaries want us to like do it in this way.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, but then the people said this source existed, but when you would actually go to the source, that story didn't actually exist. So it's kind of like, there's all these stories about kind of like people, like missionaries, like trying to teach this position, but then like there's no actual evidence of like that actually happening.
I don't doubt that happened though, because in the journal, John did write about how the tribes people made fun of him by like mimicking him or like laughing at what he looked like and stuff. And it was recorded that at least these tribes people would constantly make fun of any people who tried to like get on their land. So I feel like making fun of the people who are violently colonizing you is probably expected.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I mean, it is pretty silly. You're like, you're coming into my house and you're trying to tell me what to do. I'm going to make fun of this.
You're trying to sex. Tell me how to have sex?
You're trying to tell me how to have sex? You silly goose. Like, we already have, like, all these other things we do, and they're better. Mwah. But, yeah, so there's all these stories about this, but no one had ever, like, used the term missionary position. And what they're thinking is that Kinsey, like, had misread this document where instead of talking about the missionary position, it was this thing called missionary fashion, which is, like, along with, like, ways to have sex, missionaries were also trying to teach people, like, methods of courtship. Basically taking people like on dates or like standing close to people, or there was just like this one tribe who they would just like have the man and the woman would like lean against a tree and chat closely. Like that was like a missionary fashion of like courtship that they had taught. So people think that Kinsey was like, he took missionary fashion and then he just said missionary position. And so that's how that term came about. And then it got really more popular in like the late 80s, 1980s and the 1990s. And one fun fact about missionary position that technically in Florida, it is the only legal sex position.
What? Florida.
Oh my goodness.
In Florida.
In Florida.
Where we throw gators and use gators as weapons.
Yeah, it's like one of those laws where it's kind of like they accidentally made everything illegal except missionary position. Not to say that Floridians only do sex position, but you're probably not going to get a ticket if you're like, I mean, if you're having sex in public and someone's like giving you like public sex, is, you know, that makes
you
sense.
You get like, but no, public one's gonna... indecency, but then also you're not using missionary. So ticket number two.
So yeah, if you're going to be caught having sex in Florida, make sure it's in the missionary position if you're having public sex.
And that way it's not a double ticket.
Yeah. Exactly. Then it won't be a double ticket.
Oh my gosh. Only in Florida.
We save you money.
Yeah. So basically my long convoluted thing about the missionary position is like, sure, maybe it was, came from missionaries trying to be like, this is the godliest position or whatever. But then the term was like an accident made by a Kinsey. So, wow. Now we all know so much about this disrespectful history nugget that I brought up after Nika's story. Anyway.
Thanks, Gabby.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're so welcome. Anyway, I feel like, as always, we learned a lot about, you know, random information on today's episode of Cadaver Gals. And we'll talk at you next week. Bye. Cadaver Gals. Cadaver Gals is a production of School of Humans and iHeartRadio. It is produced and written and all that jazz by Nika Duarte, Taylor Church, and me, Gabby Watts. And you can catch us on the internet, on the Twitter, and on the Instagram at Cadaver Gals. That's gals as in gals, not as in girls. We're gals. Get it? Straight. Okay, bye.
Bye. I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.